I'm back.
What is nothing?
Now that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
What is something?
That's deep, bro. Stay away from this damn show. I'm back, suckas. I'm back. I took a little rest. I turned 40. I did some stuff. I didn't do much. I just lived my life, and I came back to the show because I missed you. I did. I missed you, and I missed this. And I got to do it a little differently. So here's the plan. It's not going to be that different. Don't worry. It's still going to be the same show. But I think what happened was, when I originally conceived of the show, it was a philosophy show because I had studied philosophy in college, and I thought, what a great place to sort of share all these ideas that I had learned about useless information over the years that I could kind of translate to people and help people with. And I feel like I did that, you know? And then life happened, you know? My mom died. I had a baby. And I couldn't do this show just talking about, you know, David Hume's causality or these big ideas of, you know, Nietzsche's Beyond Good and Evil when I had real stuff happening in life. And I thought, you know, I should just bring my life into the show because that's infinitely more interesting, I think, A, and B, I think more helpful to people when you're more honest and open. I don't want to hide behind the concept of big ideas because, you know what, in everyday life there's big ideas, and I think that's how the show is going to kind of move forward from now. It's just going to be whatever the fuck I think is deep for the week. How about that? And that could be anything. That could be a TV show I watched. It could be a song I heard, a painting, philosophy too. Yes. Books I'm reading, but I wanted to kind of broaden the spectrum because, you know, I ended up doing topics like cults and living off the grid and self-hatred and everything, which I guess wouldn't strictly be considered philosophical. So, you know, there you go. We're going to open it up. I'm going to open it up just a little. I'm going to turn myself up in my headphones. This is my husband's mic. There we go. And he's so low. He likes to keep it low. I like to be nice and loud in my own ears, like Rush Limbaugh, so I can go deaf eventually. So we're going to go forward with a show. I appreciate all the emails you guys sent of encouragement and thanks and all that. And I'm here, man. I'm here. I'm in it. I got a lot of thoughts to share and a lot of stuff to share. And okay, but first, always business. We got to pay the bills. Here it goes. Number one, Amazon. I know you shop on it. If you're not, you better get your entire life and start shopping on Amazon. Use my link. Go to thatsdeepbropodcast.com. Click on the banner at the bottom of every blog post and do your shopping as you normally would. It kicks back some change to the show, blah, blah, blah. And I'm back to touring. Thank Christ. But I'm doing it differently. I'm not doing the traditional Thursday through Sunday run in the clubs, which is what I used to do for many, many years. And that ultimately made me want to daytime drink and cry in my hotel room because I don't want to stay in, I don't want to live in another city in a hotel room alone for 4 or 5 days. Not only that, I've got a kid now. So what I'm doing is consolidating these million, you know, 6 week shows to one. That's it, bro. I'm going to your city. I'm doing one night only. Actually, I may do two shows depending on how well tickets sell in certain markets. But we're going to start off with number one. I'm starting in September 27th. Seattle, Washington, the Tacoma Comedy Club. I know that's technically Tacoma and not Seattle. Tacoma Comedy Club, September 27th. And then September 28th, I'm at Helium in Portland, Oregon. October 4th, Dallas, Tejas at the Hyenas Comedy Club. October 5th, Houston, Texas at the Secret Group. I think that's the name of the venue. I don't fucking know. October 23rd, Indianapolis at Morty's Comedy Club. And then, this is a little future in the future, but December 9th and 10th, I will be doing two nights at the DC Improv because, you know what? That's a killer club. And I can't turn down the DC Improv. It's like, it's the fucking best. It's the best, as are all those cities I just said. So come and see me there. Tickets are available. ThousandRanch.com is my website. That's thousand spelled out, ThousandRanch.com for tickets. You know. All right, let's get into it. There's this song I've been thinking about for the last like week. It's so funny. It's one of these songs I heard as a teenager, and like you think it's so good because it's talking about naughty stuff. And like I'm fucking 40 now and I still think it's the funniest song. And also very, like, a very honest song, which I just love shit like this. Okay, here we go, guys. Are you ready? Are you ready, ready, ready? Let's get deep again. Let's get deep, bro. You know what it is? I couldn't not get deep. I got depressed when I wasn't talking about the important stuff. I really did. We'll get into that later. Okay, here we go. Here we go. I fucking love this song. All right, party down. Jet Girl, and The Damn did a version, which I love The Damn, but this was written by a guy named Elton Motello. I hope I'm saying that right. I don't know. But what's fucking great about this song is that if you are a fan of European Vacation, like I know you are, there's that classic scene where the Griswolds go through all the museums. Oh no, they go through the Louvre in like 5 seconds, and there's this montage. And that tune is playing in the background. But rest assured, it is not Jet Boy, Jet Girl about a 15-year-old fucking a full-grown man and being left by that full-grown man for a woman. That is not the song played in European Vacation. Now, what played in European Vacation, it's the same tune, but with this fucking cheese dick French shit. Here it goes. This is the other song. This is by a guy named Plastic Bertrand. I don't know. But see, it's the same song, but listen, it's all French and corny. I speak French. Oh. but it's good, right? French sounds cool. Allez hop, banana. Such a silly language. So weird there's other languages. What? Come on, man, talk American. Anyway, I just think it's really funny. So apparently what happened, I read this on Wikipedia, that these guys both recorded the songs at the same time, and then Sa Plan Pour Moi, the French version, I guess hit bigger than the sucking dick version. I don't know why, because I prefer the dick suck version, homosexual song, to this. And then there you go. I guess one got bigger than the other. Interesting. So yeah, bros, I'm back. I took a little break. I don't know. What did I take? Like a month off? And I got to tell you, it was weird because my whole life I've kind of been an introspective, not kind of, I have been an introspective person. As a kid, even during recess, I never ran around. I would just lay on top of the monkey bars and like lay and just think. I love to sit and think. That's my, besides taking dumps, eating, watching anything on Netflix, which by the way, Orange is the New Black is out and I'm over the moon. I'm halfway through it. I like sedentary activities, and that's just been how I'm always been that way my whole life. I've just never been a physical person, but you know, part of that is that I love to think about stuff, and I can't just fucking, I'm not one of these people. Unfortunately, I wish I were one of these people. My whole life I've cursed myself and wished I were just a normal person, like on, you know, like one of these people I see on fucking Facebook that I went to high school with that seem to be really, really jazzed about their normal fucking lives of just raising their kids and, oh, look, we went to the train park and Sally and Dick rode a train and then we got fucking hot dogs and then my husband fingered me and I fell asleep and, you know, great. Yay. Or just, you know, posting stuff like, oh, it's the, you know, at the fucking carnival we went to. Isn't that like, I can't. I mean, I like all that stuff. I like normal life. Don't get me wrong, but I can't get it's not enough. It's not enough. I lived my life. I turned 40 and I had a great time. I did not have a party because I am seriously uncomfortable with parties that have me as the center. I don't like it. I feel like I get enough attention in my career that I absolutely, it makes my asshole. Oh, Bitsy. Oh, she's torturing Fief. Are you torturing him? You little shitbird. I get enough attention in my professional life. So I hate parties and I absolutely hate opening presents in front of people. It gives me endless diarrhea and anxiety to open gifts. And I think part of it is because, like, if I don't like the gift, I can't hide my ambivalence because I have a very hard time hiding my feelings. My husband has told me this for the last 11 years, that I can't hide my disdain for certain people, my ambivalence towards things. I can't do it. I can't fake it. I can't mask. I can't mask anything. It's horrible. It's horrible. I guess okay if you know me, you know, because then you know where we stand all the time. But I wish I could. I wish I was a better white liar. I'm not. Alas, the point of this is that I miss doing this. I miss talking about stuff that I think is important and relevant. And especially now, holy shit, the world is turning upside down with the Brexit and with Donald Trump. Holy fuck, running for president, not running for, I don't know, fake CEO of some reality show. Like this is real. And, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. And you know, on the last, I don't get political. I fucking really don't because who cares? You know, I don't care what anyone believes. It's like religion, right? You just keep it to yourself. But you know, this time I implore you, if you're a Democrat, I hope you are. Even if you're a Republican who doesn't like Trump, please vote for Hillary Clinton. Do not sit on your laurels just thinking that, hey, this guy's crazy, he's not going to get elected, because that's what they said about Putin. And yeah, and look what he's up to. So you must actively vote. And you know, because these Republicans, they take action. That's the problem, is that they got these crazy ideas and they love to go vote and they love to take action and donate money. So fucking take action. Don't rely on the other guy to lose. Please, please, please. There you go. There's my soapbox piece. So the real piece, the real meat and cheese of today, I got to hydrate. I drink water constantly. The real meat and cheese is, as I mentioned, I've been watching Orange is the New Black, and I hope you have been too, because it's a fantastic show, and it really covers like all these issues about gender and about race and everything. All the great themes are in Orange is the New Black. It's really fantastic. And there's this season, I'm not going to spoil nothing for you, but there's a great character called Judy King, which I think is like a hybrid of Martha Stewart and Paula Deen. Stupid ass Paula Deen, who was dropping N-bombs in her house, like around people. Oh boy. So there's this character, Judy King, and she's Southern and she's a little chunky and, well, she just got a little quip for everything and she just is full of sunshine and nothing gets her down, and you just see her reading a book or hanging out, and she's friends with Loosecheck, the piece of shit electrical teacher, and she's given special treatment because she's a celebrity and the prison is afraid that she'll sue them once she gets out. So everyone's walking on eggshells with Judy King. That's her storyline. And there's this great moment when she gets a roommate because she can't be with the general population. And she does that. That's so fucked up. They're like, do you want a white roommate? She's like, no, I don't mind. And they end up giving her a white roommate, Yoga Jones, who I absolutely love that character because, you know, she's all spiritual and the one hippie, you know, at least she's trying to be spiritual, spiritually minded in this horrendous, horrendous setting of prison. And, you know, she tells people to think of your prison time as a mandala, you know, which if you've ever seen Buddhist monks making a mandala, it's fucking crazy. It's just made out of sand. It's like those, I don't know if you've seen like those, it kind of looks like a Celtic-y design. It's not. They make it out of sand and it just takes hours and days and days and days and days. And these monks do it as a form of meditation and I don't know, part of their practice. And then at the end of the mandala, when it's done being made, they blow it away. So they literally destroy the beautiful thing that they have made. And the metaphor, I don't fucking know, is don't bother doing stuff, right? Am I right? No, I guess the metaphor, you know, is that time will destroy your dreams. So don't follow your dreams. That's probably not it either. I'm sure it's something about the temporary nature of existence and to enjoy it while it lasts. Some carpe diem form of dog shit, right? I don't know. So that's not what I want to talk about today. Although that is probably one of my favorite themes, which is don't bother trying. So Yoga Jones comes into Judy King's room and she's not in with the general population. Like I said, she's got her own room and the bitch has books and she's got like a tea maker and she's making nice tea for herself and she gets access to the vegetables in the garden and she's clearly been given more privileges than the other inmates. And Yoga Jones comes in and immediately feels guilty and feels a sense of, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't be this woman's roommate because the other inmates are going to be jealous, or maybe I'm not deserving of this. And I think it's actually more of the latter. If I'm not deserving of all this, you know? And so Yoga Jones in the beginning is kind of protesting Judy King's lavish existence in prison, because who are we to enjoy this life when everyone else is suffering? And Judy King has the best line, the best response to Yoga Jones. She goes, sweetie, if someone tries to give you something nice, let them do it. And like my brain exploded into 1,000 pieces. Cause I was like, fucking wow. Like how many times have I unconsciously or even consciously like not let that happen? Even something small as remember, I just finished telling you that I don't enjoy birthday parties because I don't like opening gifts in front of people. I like getting gifts. I just don't like the whole theatrics of, yes, thank you. It makes me horribly uncomfortable. And I was thinking like, well, why is that? Why can't I just accept a fucking nice thing? And, cause what you do find amongst the very wealthy is that a lot of them don't feel guilty about having stuff. A lot of very successful people don't seem to have a problem with their success. And yeah. And I was like, why the fuck do I feel? Why would I feel bad? Excuse me, for getting good, you know? And the real answer to that, if you really want to get deep on it, bro, is, if you really want to go there, is I think because most of us feel at our core very undeserving of anything good. And why is that? Let's go even a layer deeper. And I think it's because the human condition on some level, deep down inside, and this is the deepest, darkest corners, maybe not even a conscious thought, I'm talking dark shit, is that we, collective, most humans, feel like we're bad. You feel like you've done something wrong and you don't deserve good. I know, that sounds horrendous. But I feel like there's some kernel of truth to that, you know? Because like I had this birthday come around and I was like, you know, my husband was like, this is your 40th. We have to do something big. We got to have a big party. We got to do big. We got to get, you know, I was thinking like, well, what would I want? You know, and his whole desire was to make me happy with something. And I was like, I can't receive. I can't like, I'm just not there. I'm not always, you know, of course there are things I have no problem receiving, but yeah, it was a very interesting dynamic. And ultimately what I ended up doing, since you asked, is my friend Shauna came out, the one who had a Kickstarter for her art, which she achieved. So thank you if you donated to that, by the way. But she came out from New York, and we did what two, you know, 40-year-old broads do. And we went to Burke Williams, and I just had a massage, and the lady goes, do you want to have some aromatherapy? Which, by the way, aromatherapy is just code for a $20 upcharge for some smelly lotion, because there was no therapeutic element whatsoever. It was just literally $20, and she handed me the lotion that she used on me. And I was like, thank you. And her breath stank on top of it. Not cool. So we went to Burke Williams and we got massages. And normally I go nude in the jacuzzi and the steam room and the sauna. But this time, because I've always been the weirdo who's the naked Euro. Because that's what I thought people always did, man. Because my very first spa experience was in Hungary, in Budapest, at the Gellert Hotel, and everyone goes naked. There's no such thing as wearing a bathing suit in the bath there. So that's how I always did it. And every fucking time in the States, I'm the only asshole who's naked. So now I wore my bathing suit, and of course, I'm the only asshole wearing a bathing suit now. But the Burke Williams I went to, so there. But yeah, I hung out with my friend. We had some yellow cake with chocolate frosting, which is my absolute favorite white trash cake. To me, there's nothing better on earth than yellow cake pancake, as my friend Ryan Sickler calls it, and chocolate frosting, Betty Crocker, straight from Ralph's, dude. That is the best. And I've had all kinds of fancy ass cakes, you know, from whatever fancy Beverly Hills, LA hipster fucking sprinkles, whatever douchebaggy place. And it never compares to White Trash Pancake for me personally. Got a lot of that. I ate two sheets of it because Shauna's mom made some pancake for me, and then Tom made it for me, and that was the best. That's the fucking best. But back to this idea of not being able to receive the good, because I'm very good at accepting the bad. I've been really good my whole life at anticipating the bad, reacting to bad, coping with bad. I'm very good in a crisis, like the best. If something happens, Christina is a calm. I'm a fucking Marine. Okay. When it comes to bad shit happening, I'm always the one. I know I can think clearly. I can do stuff. That's because, you know, on some level, that's kind of how, I guess how I grew up was with a lot of bullshit. So you become accustomed to living with your shoulders up around your ears. And then when there's nothing happening, there's no crisis, I can't just enjoy the uncrisis, the good stuff, because I have to anticipate that the good stuff will end and then the crisis will resume, right? Like, even if I enjoy this moment now, the other foot, is it the foot or the shoe? The shoe's going to drop, right? Like, I can't just be in this joyfulness. Something bad's going to happen. I have to be punished for enjoying this thing that I'm enjoying. Oh, isn't that horrible? I think Bitsy's chewing something. But yeah, I mean, and I know I'm not the only one that feels this way. I think people that grew up with a little bit of bullshit. What the fuck? Sorry, I gotta get my dog. She's chewing something as usual. This fucking motherfucker. All right, this dumb dog, man. And you know what I just trained them to do too, both of my dogs, because I was so, they were pissing on my stairs, so I put an end to that because I put up some baby gates, and now they're around me 24/7 and they don't piss on my steps. But also these assholes shit all over my backyard. And so I read somewhere that if you let them just pee and shit where they want to, they feel like they're the boss. You know, you got to control where they shit, when they eat, all this stuff. So now I've quarantined them to shitting on the side of the house, just where I call it dog shit alley, and now they shit there, and it's been great. Now I get my grass back and my kid can play out there. It's been great. So back to not deserving stuff. I think, and I feel like that's a pretty unconscious, but I think a lot of people feel inherently bad. That's what that whole self-loathing stuff is, man. But again, it doesn't come from you. It comes from something else. Cause I watched my little baby who's 6 months old. Ellis is 6 months now, and he doesn't hate himself. There's no way. You know, he's just pure fucking light and energy and joy and laughter. And, you know, that stuff comes later through bullshit, through, you know, parental drama and, you know, religion and not always, but, you know, traumatic religious experiences and bad shit happening to you. And that goes unprocessed. You know, even the bad shit that happens to you, if you process it as a kid, I feel like it can end up okay, but man. Anyways, and I thought about this idea of not deserving and not letting someone give you something nice, right? And I think a lot of this happens with women. I'm only in reference to straight people, guys. Okay, I don't know about the gay worlds, but as far as my straight female friends, man, I've seen it time and time again, and with my own mother, man. That there, you know, a lot of women are like, I can't find a good guy. I can't find a good man. All the guy, like, you can. Yeah, you can. Actually, there's a lot of good ones, more good than bad, I believe. But they're not out at the bars. All right. The guys that are good, that are going to stay home and help you raise your babies, are not in the bar. They're not the douchebags on the internet that you're meeting. And they're probably a little awkward, okay? The good guys of the world are probably not fantastic communicators sometimes. So they may not come across as super exciting or mysterious or charismatic. But I assure you, everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. And it makes my asshole ache. Growing up watching my mother pick douchebag after douchebag after douchebag. And there was one good guy in the bunch. I remember there was a nice Jewish man who I fucking loved. I loved this guy. And what was his name? His name was Jack. I love this fucking guy, Jack. That's a good old school name, too. You don't meet many Jacks anymore. Maybe because everybody in elementary school will call you Jack off. You know, oh, look, fucking Jack, my dick is here. So you don't name your kid Jack. But it's a great old school name. This guy was so fucking normal. I remember when my mother divorced my dad when I was 4, and like around 5 or 6, she hooked up with Jack. And this guy had like a nice apartment. He had nice leather couches. Not like, it sounds seedy, but it's not. And he listened to classical music on the radio, which I didn't even know there was such a thing as a classical radio station as a child. I was like, what? They play boring music publicly? I didn't know. I couldn't believe that a man actually listened to nice music and had a nice clean apartment. And he was a kind, gentle spirit. He was about 10 years older than my mother, and I think had a desire to take care of her and of us. And I liked it. And I remember thinking, this man feels good. Like, oh, this guy feels safe. He was very paternal towards me. And I knew, you know, you just know as a kid, like, oh, this guy's a good apple. And of course, he asked to marry my mother. She refuses. And then, you know, years and years later, when I'm old enough, I asked my mother, wait, remember that great guy, Jack? What happened to him? And she goes, oh, Jack, he was so fucking boring. Oh, he's so boring, boring, boring. And I thought, that's the problem. That's the fucking problem. That's what's wrong with the world. I got to tell you that the, quote, boring people of the world are the best. And especially with straight dudes. If you're a woman listening to this and you're like, I can't find a man. No. It's because you like the douchebags. It's because you're not allowing the good. And I'm telling you, the good ones don't come at you with the coolest outfits, okay? They need a little help. You think when I met Mr. Segura that guy knew how to dress? No. He slept on a dog bed on a fucking mattress on the floor when we met. He didn't even have soap in his shower. He washed his dick and balls with shampoo, okay? But I knew that he was a good dude. I knew it. I knew it in my heart. And it took time to get to know him, because guess what? Good people are like fine wines. They take a minute. It's the douchebags that let you know everything right away. I'm talking male or female. If someone fucking downloads their life story to you in the first date, they're crazy. Run. Fucking run. That's too much of a download, dude. You don't need to know everybody's history in the first date. Give it time. Maybe in a month or two, if things are going well, then they can know the story. The backstory of your life. But Jesus Christ. And I'm not talking about details like you're divorced or you have kids, that stuff. Yeah, that should be up front. I'm talking about your dark secrets, the stuff that he's going to know if he married, like later. But the good guys are quiet sometimes, sometimes awkward, sometimes into not extroverty things. They're introverts. Yeah. And they're not going to, the point being, the good comes in that form. That's one of the forms of like, are you allowing yourself to be loved by a normal person? Because I have so many female friends that are like, I meet are bad guys. Well, yeah, because you're picking them. They're douchebags. You're not letting the good in because the good doesn't feel right to you. See, that's the real issue. Is that it doesn't feel right to you because you're so fucked up from whatever in the your dad maybe abandoned you or your dad treated you like shit or whatever the story is, that you don't feel like you deserve the good. Thank you. You're welcome. Free advice. also there with money. There's an amount that you can spend that feels good, right? And then there's an amount that feels gross. Like, you know, when you have money to spend on clothing or a good time, if it's too much, then you're like, oh, that's not good. And then you're out of balance again, and that doesn't feel good. Right. There you go. And also afraid of just being big, like being being big. And I mean that like in every sense of the word, like in every sense of life, I mean, like afraid of letting that bigness occur to you in life, right? Whether it be relationship, the career, the fucking, oh, this microphone stand sucks. The bigness of it all. It's very scary. And you're going to have people disapproving and people gossiping and people telling you you shouldn't do this and that because they think they know what's best for you, but they don't. But they don't. All right. So speaking of fear of good, I'm going to answer an email I got from a lady, and she asks, I'm 36 years old, coming out of 2 years of ridiculous anxiety. That's a whole different story. Living with my boyfriend, working as a nurse. My big life question that floats through my head multiple times daily is whether or not I want to have a child. Historically, I've always wanted to have kids, or one anyways. Since going through ridiculous anxiety for 2 years, I am now doubting my ability to care for a child. Maybe not so much that I won't be able to care for it, but that I won't like my baby, or I'll feel trapped and claustrophobic, or I'll get postpartum and be a total basket case. I recently got a dog, and for a few days after getting my dog, I had moments of anxiety just from commitment to the dog. And the truth is, I felt relief when my boyfriend said, "We can always give the dog away if it's not working out." Can we do that with our child if it doesn't work out? I feel like I hear people saying they, quote, always knew they wanted kids or want nothing more and are over the moon when pregnant. I don't feel this way. Once in a while, I have these moments of feeling sure and excited, but then comes this feeling of dread once my asshole brain kicks in. Thoughts, is it normal to think like this? I wish it was more clear for me. Deep down, I feel like it would all be okay in the end, but taking that leap terrifies me. I almost wish I would just get pregnant from a toilet seat or a pool. Is that a thing? It is, according to some people. And I think a lot of people feel the way you do. More people do than probably you imagine. And that's why a lot of people get pregnant, quote, on accident. I don't buy that, by the way. I don't fucking buy that for a minute, especially us old bitches when we get pregnant, quote, accidentally. Okay. Like, bitch, you've successfully not gotten pregnant for 38 years and now you're accidentally pregnant. Okay. Get your entire life, you big liar. You know, because we all know at this point how to get pregnant and how to avoid it. And you've successfully avoided it this long. So don't fucking lie to me. On some level, unconsciously, you wanted to get pregnant. Heller. Okay, so, God damn it, I'm telling you, I want to write a book on pregnancy and child stuff because the stuff that's out there, and I read almost all of them, is total bullshit and candy coats, sugar coats, and doesn't really deal with the reality of the feelings of having a baby. And to our detriment as women doing this, because now if you have even a weird feeling towards your child, you may feel like a horrible person. And I gotta tell you that I'm just thankful that I have a shrink who talked me through all this crap, because it's very, if you're looking outside of yourself for the answers, there's very few, because our society, our culture does not allow women to have even the slightest inkling of a taboo feeling towards maternity, pregnancy, motherhood, all of the above. It's very taboo if you fucking say anything remotely unfavorable about raising your baby. So let's go through it piece by piece. Here's where I'm leaning towards you should have a child, you personally, because you wrote that you've always wanted to have kids. Wait, you did write here. Hold on. Historically, I have always wanted to have kids. Okay, so that's kind of the important thing. Have you? Has it always kind of been in your head? Then it's there, and it's something to think about, right? If you would have said historically, I've never wanted them. The thought terrifies, repulses, whatever. I'd be like, no, don't do this. I'm not going to tell you whether or not to do it, but I will say I'm glad that you're in counseling for your ridiculous anxiety. And I wish I knew more about that, because that's a biggie to deal with. And I don't know what the root of that is. So I don't, you know, that's why I can't tell you what to do with your life. Nor would a comedian, should any comedian tell you what to do with your life. I don't know. Fuck. But listen, so, okay, here's the truth of it is. Here's the ugly truth about this. I felt the same way. I absolutely doubted my ability to care for a child, because guess what? I never even held a baby before I had Ellis. Not even held. Maybe once. I held my sister-in-law's kid once. I've never changed a diaper. I've never I've never done anything for a baby. So that's normal. Yeah, you should doubt your ability to care for a child. It means you give a fuck. I don't know who these people are that just go willy-nilly into pumping out children. You should be terrified. You should have anxiety. It means that you care. Good. Have it. But then take classes. Just take classes. Read books. It's not that complicated. Once you figure it out, you figure it out. You're afraid you won't like your baby. Yeah, there are times you won't like your baby. Lots of people don't like their babies at times, because that baby, when it comes out of you, you'd think, oh, this is intuitive. It's just a tiny person. No, they're kind of space aliens when they come out of you, because they're not really developed yet. Their brains aren't, the human brain, when it comes out of you as a baby, they're underdeveloped by like 3 months. That's why it's called the third trimester, right? That baby still thinks it's inside of you. So it's on a whole different planet. And sometimes it cries and you don't know why. And you won't like your baby when it cries in the beginning. Maybe even now, sometimes I don't like him all the time, but I love him. I will always love my child, of course. I'm in love with him. I'm enraptured with my baby. But like with any relationship, you can't always feel just one way about a person. And you write, or I'll feel trapped and claustrophobic. Yeah, you're going to feel that too. And I don't know why the fuck the books don't tell you this. When you have a baby, you're going to think your fucking life is ruined, that it's over, that you'll never see daylight again, and that you'll never work again, that your body is going to look like dog shit for the rest of your life, that you'll never have sex again, that you'll never have your boobs back, that you wish for just a fairy godmother to come and take that baby away in the beginning. Yeah, you're probably going to feel that way. And you're afraid you'll get postpartum and be a basket case. Yeah, you probably might. I did. Jesus Christ, of course. Listen to the episodes where I'm talking about having a baby. In the beginning, I was out of my fucking mind, because your hormones drop and you will be crazy. And hey man, even with dogs, you said you got a dog, and yeah, of course, I have the same thing with these two assholes. There are Bitsy the other night woke me up at 3:30 in the morning to let her out to go take a shit. I wanted to fucking throw her on the 405 freeway. But what happens is, and I think what I'm sensing from you is you're afraid that if you have a negative feeling towards the stuff, that you have to throw it all away, right? That you can't have negative and positive thoughts simultaneously, or thoughts and feelings about these situations. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at here, is that the good always comes with a little, there's always the rub, right? There's always the hitch. For instance, people are like, oh, you know, being a stand-up comic, that must be the best job in the world. And yeah, sometimes it is. Not when I have to get on a plane at 6 in the morning, 4 in the morning, fly across the country, when I lived in hotels for days on end alone. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just saying there's good and bad to every situation. And the good with babies and kids and dogs, from what I experience, the good really does outweigh the bullshit and the anxiety and the fear that you eventually get over and you settle into a new life because the old life is gone. It is gone. There are vestiges of it. There are glimmers of it. There are things I still do that I did before I had a child. Yeah. But is it ever going to be exactly the same? No. Am I ever going to sleep in till 11 and just wake up next to my husband casually, leisurely, and I don't know, maybe we'll take in a movie. Maybe we'll have brunch today. Where's the day going to take us? Those days are over. At least for now. He's 6 months old. Maybe in a few years when that kid's older, we can do all that again. But for now, it's just different. It's not bad. It's pretty great most of the time. Look, can you hear him? He's crying in the next room right now. But, hey man, it's normal. And there are some people who probably don't have these bad thoughts towards their children. I don't know. I feel like I have a cousin who's just over the moon to stay home all day and with the kids and, you know, obsess over costumes for Halloween and buy trading toys with other moms online. I don't fucking know. But I mean, look, everybody gets annoyed at some point. Oh, did you hear that? The shrill cry of a baby. It's become sweet music to my ears and sleep deprivation. It's not in the same anymore, man. You don't sleep as much as you used to. You don't, you don't do a lot of stuff the way you used to. You just do a little differently. That's all. That's all. It's a change. And listen, man, you're 36, so just get on that stuff soon. Don't wait. And don't let fear guide your life. If that, you know, more importantly, don't let anxiety about the unknown take your life from you. That's the worst. When you let the dark side of the force take your good from you, you know, because there's good and bad to both these things. That's the truth of it is. I just wish more people talked about the reality. It really kills me. It really fucking kills me. God damn it. I mean, I talk about this shit in my act now, and I feel like people are like, oh, good. But, yeah, there's a lot of bullshit out there. The worst is that the internet stuff, you know, that What to Expect website and all these mommy blogs and mommy message boards. I want to blow my brains out when I read people on those things because nobody's being honest. I think it's too scary. But yeah, having a kid is a lot like, actually, and I know people will disagree with me here. It is kind of like having a dog. A dog that you are genetically similar to. A dog that needs about 10 times more care. Because dogs require a lot of care if you're doing it right. A child needs a lot more, but it's kind of similar in nature a little. I've wiped my dog's asses several times. You got to make sure they're fed. You got to make sure they're healthy, that they're okay. But yeah, I don't know. It starts there. It starts the dog. So you're on the right path. You're on the right path. Yeah, you're not always going to enjoy having a dog. There are times we wanted to throw Bitsy right into the trash. Horrible dog. Horrible dog. She's getting better now, but God, what a dumb fuck. I had the same fear about hating my child. It's interesting. I had the same fear that I wouldn't like him because my parents, they didn't really like me. I think that's the real fear is that you're going to end up being like your parents. That's the actual, and that's why having children is so hard. It's not that, it is all this other stuff like sleep deprivation and, you know, your schedule needs to be really maintained closely and money and all these things. Yes, yes, yes. But I think it is what really boils down to is how much you love yourself, ironically, because you're forced to look at all the stuff you don't like about yourself very quickly when you have a child. Because you go, oh, well, I want to do it differently than what my folks did to me because I don't want to end up being like them. And then it becomes a game of, shit, am I like them? Oh, no, I just did that. Does that mean I'm my mom? Does that mean I'm my dad? Fuck, I hate that part of myself. I fucking hate that part of myself. And that's why. It's torture. But in a torture in a good way. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, I heard Marianne Williamson say this, and it really resonated with me. I was listening to some talk she was giving, and she said at a certain age, a certain point in life, if you have nobody to be responsible to, meaning no, you know, partner, no dog, no pets, no something to be responsible to and with, that your life becomes very perverse. And I thought, what a great word for that, because I had the exact same feeling when I was about, you know, 37, 38, like, you know, what am I doing with my life here? How many trips can Tom and I go on? How many dogs can we have? How many dinners can we go on? Where you're like, your life is just kind of fucking meaningless. Like, what am I doing? What are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? What in the fuck are we doing here? So it became evident that having a child, you want to give something to someone else, right? To something else, something meaningful. And there you go. It adds meaning to your life. Another layer, like a very profound, a good layer in a good way. So there you go. Yeah. There you go. Have a kid, man. As long as you have a good relationship, do that first. Promise me that. If you didn't, I don't know if you mentioned that. You have a boyfriend. Fuck that. First of all, get married. Do not live with the boyfriend. You better get your lighting. Fucking read that part. Listen. I've done it too. I'm not above it. I've done it. I've been lived with a boyfriend before, and it was terrible when it broke off. If you're going to have a child, I highly recommend getting married, because bitches will lie to you and people will lie to you and say, what's the difference between living together and marriage? Everything. Absolutely everything is a difference. It is a legally binding contract between you and a person, but it's more than that. It is, you become family with that person, not just some fucking roommate that can ditch out on you. And when you got a kid, you are family. And it means a lot, because you've chosen that person as your family. And if you're going to have a kid, I think it's important that that person, that baby, knows that they belong to a mommy and a daddy. Yeah. Or a mommy and a mommy, or a daddy and a daddy. Whatever. You know what I'm trying to say. Just, you know, make it as official as you can for that kid's sake. Yeah. There you go. Am I fucking 1950s enough for you? I swear, the older I'm getting, the more traditional I've become, because I start to see that some of the old ways weren't so bad. Not all of them are good. Not all of them are good. Make America great again, Christina. No, that's not what I mean. By the way, that's just code for make America white. You know that, right? I hope you guys know that. It's deplorable. And with the whole British, the Brexit, that's basically rhetoric for keeping things white, which is terrifying and historically has never worked. never works to build walls and exclude groups of people. It's just, history keeps proving it over and over and over again, and we keep fucking doing it again and again. Like, really? We just did this not that long ago. We just did this. You guys don't remember? You don't remember World War II? No? How about communism? How about the Berlin Wall? Anyone remember that little? No? Okay. Well, let's do it again. Let's try to exclude groups. Let's try to scapegoat immigrants. Okay. Scapegoat the immigrants. Unbelievable. All right. That's it. Email me again. Let's do this again. That's deepbropodcast@gmail.com. Email me your questions. I would love to answer them. These are great. These are fun. And yeah, new show, guys. It's the same show. It's just that I'm not going to be beholden to sticking to philosophy, because I can't. It's too rigid. Yeah, always deep, right, bros? So we'll leave it at that, and have a great week. And I will see you again. That's a promise. I'll be back. I promise you. And there you go. All right, guys. Be good. Meow.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with.
Yeah. It's Christina P, aka Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house, it's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party, our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke, or was it Socrates? Aristotle or Plato, maybe Hippocrates. Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? That's deep, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life. And you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro.